97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. We're discussing the future of the NCAA. With us today are Scott Herko, a professor of sport management at Central Michigan University and an associate with the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics. Also, Mark Nagel, who teaches sport and entertainment management at the University of South Carolina. He is a principal in the College Sport Research Institute. Gentlemen, I've covered the NCAA for a long time, and I'm seeing some things I've never seen before. As far as the NCAA is concerned, backing off on sanctions, things along these lines. Scott, are we seeing fundamental changes in the NCAA these days?
I would say certainly. Some of this is brought about by the pressures of society and the expectations of college sport programs and the amount of massive media dollars that are generated by and for college football programs. But then outside of that, it's how do we manage these, particularly the have and the have-not programs, and those that have access to the major amounts of revenue and those that don't are in the same competitive division, and as such, it has left for a lot of concern with respect to how to govern the future of college sports with a bifurcated model of different players, if you will, different institutions who have fundamentally different financial models.
Mark, let's pick up on Scott's terminology, the haves and the have-nots. The haves have become so powerful. Have they gotten to the point that they don't need the NCAA?
Well, I think in some ways that's accurate. I think when you start to look at what does the NCAA do for the big-time, you know, the SEC, ACC, Pac-12 conference level, And there's an argument to be made that they don't do a heck of a whole lot. Obviously, they establish rules and they're involved in maintaining eligibility and some of those other police activities. But from a marketing standpoint, they're not involved negotiating conference-level television deals. They certainly run the NCAA men's basketball tournament and the women's basketball tournament, which makes some money. But there's a strong argument to be made if you're looking at it from a conference commissioner standpoint of some of these super conferences that the NCAA isn't needed for a lot of the things that they might have been needed for 30 or 40 years ago.
Scott, how does that change things?
Well, I think the one thing that you think of when you think of the competitive nature of college athletics is if you're number 10 in the country, or if you're number 8 in the country, or if you're number 13 in the country, or if you're number 1 in the country in football, you still need to play a number 40 or a number 36 or a number 58 or a number 60. So in other words, there is a need for these institutions to play other schools and their programs in order to be seen as being competitive and to be seen as number one or be seen as a highly ranked team. So that's part of the challenge in all of this, is the challenge being how do we differentiate between the competitive level of have and have-nots and the financial model, which is completely different at an institution like myself here at Central Michigan University than one 55 miles down the road at Michigan State University. They're completely different financial models, and it's one that leads to the question of, does Michigan State really need a Central Michigan University to be successful with their college athletics program?
Mark, you're in one of the power conferences there at South Carolina, the SEC. Some would say the king of all conferences, especially when it comes to football. Are we talking about really very, very different types of institutions?
Well, from an athletic standpoint, absolutely. And, you know, Scott points out the differences between Michigan State and Central Michigan. You just have to look at what's the size of the stadiums, what's the size of the revenue that's generated from television deals. What's the size of the money that's generated on sales of licensed merchandise and other things? So it's pretty easy to stack up financially that it's not necessarily even night and day. It's almost night and day, and one's on one planet and one's on another planet. The differences are so vast. I think what's interesting that a lot of people aren't talking about is this has been in motion really for 40 years. The NCAA back in the early 1970s, the bigger schools, the more powerful athletic schools, already broke away in the early 1970s when the NCAA split into multiple divisions. They split even further in 1978. And so I think that there's been this idea for 40 years that why are we all in the same room negotiating together when we have maybe very different interests, even though we all play what's called college athletics. The way we play it and the pond that we're playing in is so different at different levels that this is really a natural outcome from what's been set in motion 40 years ago.
Scott, in all walks of life, power follows money. And the power conferences have all the money. So why does the NCAA even exist?
Well, I think that the NCAA exists historically in a mission to, write the rules and create a equal competitive playing field. Now, I think what we're seeing right here today is football driving the discussion. And the vast amounts of money that are made by the major power football programs related to those that don't have access to that revenue. So people subscribe or expect to watch the Big Ten Network because they want to watch football. That's the primary driver. Okay, there are other programs that are on that network. You might tune into a soccer game or a softball game from now and then, but 80% of the traffic is driven by football to that network. That network is a significant financial revenue stream to each of the Big Ten schools that the revenue that's generated based upon that viewing is equal to the size of the entire budget of athletic programs that are subsidized 70% of the time by their institutions in a have-not conference. So the size just from media generation of football alone is one thing, but then when you take a look at the amount of ticket sales in massive stadiums, and then the ability to donate for ticket seat licenses to these stadiums and have 80% of those donations written off your taxes. And that is a capability at the big-time schools like Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State. That just doesn't exist at a Central Michigan University. And so we're seeing an expansion of the haves' ability to generate revenue away from the have-nots, and the NCAA is caught in a dilemma where they do not have control over football broadcasting, or football revenue. And so it leads one to question the role of the NCAA.
We're talking on Sports Focus about the future of the NCAA with Scott Herko and Mark Nagel. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus, where the topic today is the future of the NCAA. We're talking to Scott Herko and Mark Nagel about that overarching subject. Mark, we talked about the haves and the have-nots among institutions. Aren't there also haves and have-nots among sports? How can you compare, for example, volleyball to football?
Well, you really can't, because what ultimately I think is people need to understand is that the power and the revenue that's generated by football dwarfs all of the other sports, and it even in some cases dwarfs basketball to such an extent. I point out a couple years ago when some of these conferences were making their latest shifts, when there was a discussion about the Oklahoma and Texas schools going west and going to the Pac-12, or what is now the Pac-12. People said, well, what about the University of Kansas? What about the University of Kansas? And you certainly talk about Kansas and the history and the proud tradition and their ability to generate revenue and as a basketball school. But Kansas was basically going to be one of the big schools left out of the shuffle. And I think that's a very strong indicator that everybody should pay attention to, that really we're talking about football drives almost all of these decisions, and even basketball, which we think of as being very a high producer of revenue, in many cases can't compare as a drop in the bucket to football. And then beyond that, all the other sports are basically non-revenue and are not going to be contributing anything to the bottom line other than negatives or other than expenses.
And Scott, when you don't control the revenue, there's not much left to control. But in the past, what the NCAA has controlled is sanctions, for example. But recently, we're seeing things that Johnny Manziel gets a slap on the wrist, what would have resulted in major penalties maybe only 10 years ago, backing off in the Penn State case. Why these changes?
Well, I think you're seeing the NCAA at a crossroads with respect to how it makes decisions and how it's governed. And you're seeing a difference in the tensions between those that are the significant generating revenue-generating institutions and those that are not. So when you see an institution like Penn State that was involved in a terrible environment there, and the NCAA comes out with a very heavy-handed approach with minimum due process for the institution to respond, and at the same time, the NCAA decides to suspend its governance policies, then what you have is a heavy-handed approach by an organization that has many different types of constituencies, and you get a negative response from those that do have access to revenue but are concerned about the ability of the institution of college athletics to govern itself. And so you see that on one end, and then on the other end, you see the need for institutions to also protect their own turf. And I think that you're seeing this with respect to the sanctions aspect and how the NCAA handles some of the unfortunate rules-breaking that is a result of some of the financial and commercial model of college athletics that they created themselves. And that's a significant concern for the NCAA, and they're struggling over how best to be able to respond in an environment that they helped to create.
Mark, again, after years of being in the media and having covered many, many cases of the NCAA levying sanctions against programs, and one thing that would come up again and again, lack of institutional control. That's what the NCAA would cite in many, many of these cases. Now it seems that the NCAA lacks institutional control.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Perception is among a lot of the bigger conferences and a lot of the more powerful schools that the NCAA, who is controlling the NCAA? Well, if you flip it back around and say the NCAA is a member institution, which are the most important members tend to be the members that make the most amount of money. And so I think the NCAA has always kind of walked a thin line as a member institution, but now that line is very, very thin because ultimately, you know, a very small percentage, maybe 50 schools of the 1,000 that are in the NCAA or of the 120 that are playing big-time football, there's 40 to 50 that really generate most of the revenue. And so you can't have an environment in which your top revenue producers feel slighted or feel that they're not getting what they're supposed to be getting from the institution or from the NCAA that they've helped create and fund.
Mark, the Miami case comes to mind. That it seems, from an outsider looking in, that when Miami stood up and said, we're going to fight this, that the NCAA backed off in a major way. Is that a test case?
I think that's one of many, and you certainly saw the UCLA case where the NCAA had to pull back as well, and part of that was because their investigators were making comments that were getting discussed on plane flights and so forth. But yeah, I think that if you look at who has more to lose, I mean, if there was always that argument in the old UNLV case with Jerry Tarkanian where the court said, well, UNLV can just leave the NCAA if they don't like what's going on. At that point, that was 25 years ago, you said, well, the UNLV couldn't necessarily leave because where would they go to play? Well, now if you look at Miami, if there's enough other schools that are on Miami's caliber that basically start to ask the question of what's the NCAA doing for us, the NCAA has a major problem.
Scott, if you were representing the NC2A or advising the NC2A, what would you tell them?
Now you're putting me on the spot of some place, something I wouldn't want to do. The NCAA is being driven primarily, as has been stated in this, by revenue generation. And my recommendation to the NCAA would be to look at how they make decisions and the individuals that are making decisions based upon what's in the best interest of the members. The suspension of governing has caused a lot of issues with respect to providing support for athletes up to the cost of attendance, about $2,000. That was primarily driven by the staff at the NC2A, as well as revenue-generating conferences. And then when it got to the floor of the convention of the NCAA, it was voted down by the membership because there were more members that couldn't afford it than those who could. So the reality is that you're looking at a bifurcated system again, but I think that those that are making decisions could use some support or a change in the decision-making structure from those that aren't so closely tied to the revenue generation. Get closer to the playing field and see what is affecting those athletes who aren't revenue-generating athletes, or those who may be revenue-generating athletes in non-revenue-generating conferences. So let's look at the whole picture instead of trying to make decisions based upon primarily financial well-being.
And we're talking about the future of the NC2A with Scott Herko and Mark Nagel on Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus, where the topic today is the future of the NC2A. We're talking with Scott Herko and Mark Nagel. Mark, the NC2A basketball tournaments, is that it as far as what the NC2A controls these days?
Well, the NCAA tournament and the revenues from it are well over 90% of what the overall NCAA revenue pie is. And so it's basically their one crown jewel of revenue that they have. And so if they were to lose that, that would be a major, major problem for the financial existence of the NCAA. Since 1984, when the NCAA lost their antitrust case regarding controlling of television revenues for football, the NCAA has really been a NCAA basketball entity, and that's all of their revenue at the current time.
Scott, what's the argument for keeping the tournaments under the NC2A as opposed to the conferences just running those tournaments?
Well, I think that what the NCAA does, and they do a fairly good job, is that they do provide championships at all levels, and they have a model for championships that's well established and is well polished. And so part of the model of providing championships in college basketball, and particularly for the Final Four, is duplicated to some extent at some of the other non-revenue sports. And so now they may not have the public attention and they may not receive the revenue generation, but certainly the NCAA does provide a service with respect to creating a championship environment and creating the rules and the playing field for most of the other sport, all sports, college athletics, varsity college athletics in major college sports, except for FBS football, bowl subdivision football. Every other major sport that is participated by varsity athletic programs in the higher education level is championships are controlled by the NCAA, and they do a service with respect to that, and they control that, as well as some of the money that they generate from the Final Four. Well, most of it is redistributed to the memberships in the form of stipends to the institutions to support injuries, to support academic enhancements of some of the college athletes, as well as sending back to the athletic departments that they turn around and pump back into some of their Title IX non-revenue sports. So key, the NCAA does provide a service in being able to run a very well-polished product and be able to generate and redistribute revenue across the membership.
So, Mark, if not the NCAA, then what?
Well, I think there's a case that I think is going to be made fairly soon, maybe not necessarily this year, but fairly soon, that the big power conferences might look at their own model and might say, okay, what we want to do, particularly for football and basketball, the revenue sports, and part of this might tie into what happens in the O'Bannon decision and some of the other things that are working their way through the court system, where those power conferences might say, okay, what we're going to have is a different model, and we're going to certainly have our non-revenue sports that will compete under this collegiate model, but we're going to have a different model that we might even have our own organization that runs this championship for football and men's basketball. I think that's a very likely reality, whether that's in the next year or two or maybe a little bit farther down the line. I think it's at some point it's going to be inevitable that we're going to see massive changes in what's going on in college athletics at the big time level.
Scott, in only 10 seconds or so, do you concur with that?
Well, I concur, and I think that the O'Bannon case may force the issue if the NCAA and its membership doesn't do it on its own.
That's it for this edition of Sports Focus. We've been talking to Scott Herkel and Mark Nagel. Our thanks to you, gentlemen. Thanks to producer Justin Blankenship and engineer Gary Kirk. Thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.